Just plugged in.
Okay, it is, today is Friday, September 17th, right?
Yeah.
2004, and I'm here meeting with Glenn Kane to do an oral history interview dealing with the end of the Industrial Relations Institute. And so let us begin. This will probably take an hour or so,
mm-hmm.
or maybe less or whatever. Anyway, first, Glenn, let me ask you to tell us a little bit about your background before coming here, where you went to school, et cetera, and how you ended up here at Wisconsin.
Okay, let's see. I had a born in Chicago, Illinois, and brought up in Gary, Indiana. I mentioned that because my father, or stepfather, actually worked in the steel mills.
Mm-hmm.
And had this association with my mother was. I had association with labor unions through that. My mother was a diehard liberal, so I, you know, reading the New Republic from age 12 on forward. Went to Lake Forest College for my undergraduate degree. Then Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley for a MA, and there I was emphasizing labor economics, particularly industrial relations aspects. I was a research assistant at the Institute of Industrial Relations at Berkeley, and it was, you know, an esteemed place.
Mm.
Clark Kerr, as the one-time director, at that time he was chancellor of the university, but still close to the Institute for Industrial Relations. And then left there with my master's degree, actually hoping to work for labor unions. And at that time, my model was a previous graduate from that program who went on the assembly line in the automobile factories as a way of rising, joining and rising in the auto workers union. That particular man is Jim Stern, who I later became a colleague of here at the University of Wisconsin. At any rate, I got my master's degree in 1957, going on to 1958. And we were in a recession. There was no hiring in auto plants or aircraft plants or others that were in the jurisdiction of the auto workers. And I ended up getting a job, coming back to the Chicago area, getting a job at the Federal Reserve Bank at Chicago, and as kind of a research clerk there. And then went on to graduate school at the University of Chicago for a PhD. And just as an aside, Chicago, of course, is in their economics department, noted for being, let's just say, anti-union, or maybe more fundamentally oriented toward free market capitalism, and generally thought of as a bastion of conservatism, Milton Friedman and so on. And so this was kind of a shock to me after coming out of a very liberal University of California, Berkeley, and pro-union University of California, Berkeley.
Let me just interrupt for a minute.
Okay. Yeah, it seems to be working. At University of Chicago for my PhD, I worked under Professors Al Rees and Greg Lewis, who were dedicated labor economists. But labor economists devoted to the application of neoclassical economics and econometrics to the investigation of labor market topics. My dissertation was on the labor force participation of married women. That is basically the increase of labor force participation, that's employment in the labor market of married women, which has been a social revolution, as we all know, or most of us think. So this had, of course, nothing to do with industrial relations in kind of the more narrow sense of the term. But I maintained my interests in labor unions and actually worked as a research assistant with a industrial relations professor named Joel Seidman, and had a research project on unionization of chemists and engineers, and which is a rare form of labor unions. Mm-hmm. And it's has never gone very far. My guess is today, if there's 1% of engineers and chemists and so on as part of a bona fide labor union, that would be a high estimate. But my main interests, of course, were at this point with the dissertation, labor economics as it applied to the labor market. Women in the labor force, in particular, and then after getting the degree there, my first and only academic appointment has been at the University of Wisconsin, and here I became affiliated with Jerry Summers, who was the kind of the senior labor economist, a labor economist defined as one in the heart and soul of the economics department, although there were a number of labor economists who were part of the economics department, but whose their main interest was in the Industrial Relations Institute. And with Summers, who was also affiliated with the Industrial Relations Institute, and I think maybe a year after I got here, he was the director of that institute. Summers was channeling a lot of his research projects having to do with evaluating training programs through the Industrial Relations Institute. And again, I had this long-standing interest in labor unions and industrial relations policies in a rather broad sense. So it was very comfortable and natural for me to have some sort of relationship. I was a member of the Institute of Industrial Relations. Occasionally, over the next 10, 15 years, I would teach a course or so in their program. So that's the nature, as the first question is phrased here, of my association, or at least background, with the Institute.
Okay, how would you describe the Institute, let's say, you came here, what, 63?
1963.
Mm-hmm. Let's say through into the early 70s. How would you describe the atmosphere and quality of the program, et cetera?
Yeah. Well, I think it was one of the two or three outstanding programs in industrial relations in the nation, with the, I think it's safe to say, the only rivals being the Cornell University program, which indeed was an entire school, yeah. I think. So it was larger, but also quite prestigious. And then perhaps University of Illinois, although I think at the time Illinois would be a smaller and less prestigious program than Wisconsin's. So it was, you know, an honor and a privilege to be associated with the Industrial Relations Institute here. And I very much, you know, liked the colleagues. After all, there were maybe five members of the economics department who were very closely identified with, I mean, the Institute I think it's safe to say their main research interests, teaching interests, institutional interests were with the Industrial Relations Program, although they were bona fide members of the Department of Economics. And you know, it's worth saying that at that time, there was not a need or to have divided loyalties. There was such a, I think, a close integration between the Economics Department and the Industrial Relations Program. So you weren't kind of choosing sides or anything like that. But I came in 1963, and over the next 10 years, and extending into the next 20 and 30 years, there was a decline in industrial relations topics and style of research with respect to economics. That is, economics developed different modes of research. They had, in fact, had developed different modes of research and so on much earlier. That is, starting from, you know, maybe the 1920s mm-hmm. or 1930s and so on. There was this divergence between styles in economics and the styles associated with research styles and topics and so on associated with industrial relations, or even a lot of labor economics, as labor economics was thought of and taught in those days. But the decline from, I would say the late 1960s on was pretty sharp, and that again, decline in the sense of the industrial relations program moving away from economics, or perhaps you could say economics and the departments of economics and ours in particular moving away from the industrial relations type of research topics, and it is associated in part with the business school here at the University of Wisconsin becoming playing a larger role in the industrial relations program. Directors of the Institute for Industrial Relations were often from the business school and teaching topics. I suppose it's worth saying that it was only in maybe the mid-1960s, you could correct me on this, Lee, if the PhD was granted in the program. So, you know, you might say that was another distinction between the, you know, more high-tech, high-powered, quotes around the term, program in economics and their PhD program, and the students and teaching and research associated with the Industrial Relations Institute. So the my kind of drifting away from the Industrial Relations program was part of that general separation and drifting apart that from between economics and industrial relations, and also associated with the competing interests of the Institute for Research on Poverty, which became my almost, you know, entire home for my research from 1967, when the program was getting started, until my retirement. Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned the kind of pulling apart of the two fields. Do you see any sort of benchmarks in the field of industrial relations? Obviously, the unionization has declined and so on. How would you date those influences?
Well, of course, the decline in labor unions, which had been the most central, I think, institution that captured the energies and interests and even affiliations of much of our staff. The decline of unions was, you know, I think a major source of, well, how did you phrase your question?
Well, yeah. What were some key benchmarks in the evolution?
A major source of the kind of fading of the field of industrial relations within economics. And associated with that, it became, I think, a little bit more, well, it was more associated with the business administration school here. Let's call it something close to personnel, as it was called then. I think it's human resources or something it's called, although in economics, human resources refer to something quite different, human capital, and the tremendous surge of theoretical and econometric research and dealing with human resources in that sense, human capital, not with personnel management and those sorts of subject matters that we associate with the term human resources in the business school. And then there was also what used to be called industrial psychology, which, although it never had a major component of that in the industrial relations program here, did become more important under the new name of what is the term that's used for what's called what used to be called industrial psych? It may come to me later, but in any case, having to do, I think, with the more of personnel issues, organizational.
Theory. Organizational theory. Management.
I think something like that.
Organizational theory. Mike Aiken taught that and others did.
He was actually a sociologist, and I think that field, though, was more dominated by people with psychology backgrounds. Again, this kind of leading to the distancing between economics and the industrial relations program, should have shifted to the business school, and I think it's correct to say that in most industrial relations programs going on today, they're more closely aligned with business schools than they are with economics departments.
Do you think that several attempts were made to get tenure-granting status for the Institute? One back in 1977, actually Jerry Summers had done the spade work, but then died very suddenly, just before it came up, and then LNS turned it down.
Yeah.
And then another effort was made in about 1985 that was fairly substantial, and then couple of efforts were made in the 90s, but by then it was hard to sure for people to take it seriously. Do you think that would have made a difference, and would that have been a good move?
It's a major issue, question, controversy, in a very general sense. There's a colleague in our department today in economics who said that, who is devoted to, let's call it, more the purity of the existing disciplines and fields, economics or history or sociology, who said that in universities, their programs, anytime you see the term studies associated with a program, you know it's not, you know, legitimate or high quality and so on. So, and this, you know, this spills all over the place, whether it's ethnic studies programs or aged studies and so on. This question of whether universities shouldn't put, you know, 90% of their eggs in the baskets of the more pure disciplines and more rigorous scientific programs, you know, being generous with that term as it applies to the social sciences. Of course, and this is referring to the social sciences here. I mean, the hard sciences, they have their well-established areas of expertise, and there's all sorts of amalgamation of fields. And humanities has its own establishment. But in the social sciences, yeah, there is this question. And I think I can say a couple of points here that not only my own bias or inclination is towards the established disciplines and thinking of the amalgamated and multidisciplinary programs as being more, you know, as a suspect, or put it this way, they have to prove themselves, and some of them can be, you know, outstanding, and I certainly feel that our industrial relations program here was outstanding up until the point in which the it kind of did drift away from economics and into business administration. I think it's more difficult to establish and maintain the highest standards for quality of research and so on. Something that you mentioned about the attempt to establish a PhD program and separate, well, in particular, giving it tenure rights. I think it's safe to say that Ed Yong himself was not in favor of that. He would have preferred. I talked to him about this, which is why I can attest to this. It happened to be, this is a digression, I'll try to keep it brief. It happened to be at a time when he was asking me to be on the advisory board or something to establish a Black Studies program. And I said, I don't like those kinds of programs. I mean, it's just very, very hard for me to be enthusiastic about it. I think, you know, the a variety of these issues, the sociology, the civil rights issue, certain economics of it, they should be given close attention, much more attention, and so on in the respective fields. But the idea of setting up these separate programs, I think they're just hard to control with quality and so on. And at that time, I said, I apologize to say this to you, Ed, that I felt the same way about the industrial relations program. I did not think that it should have its own tenure and have its own program. And he said, well, don't feel any need to apologize. I felt the same way. I think that it was not a, it was the right idea not to give a tenure, or not, it was, that is, I didn't favor giving the program tenure rights. At the same time, I recognize that, particularly in that setting, it was another, you know, body blow to the program, and it may very well have required that. Well, I think eventually it did, but this, that is, industrial relations program, I think, did get
no.
the right.
No.
No. Never.
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah. You always had to be tenured in some other department,
mm-hmm.
but you could be a quarter or a half time on the IR budget.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it was Jim Sterling who got the budget lines back when yeah. Kleeny was the dean in the late yeah. 60s, early 70s. And so the IR had more flexibility, and you could hire a person from the business school to teach a course.
Yeah.
You know, paying their salary.
I see.
Yeah.
You know. But you could not have a tenure
no.
home.
Mm-hmm. No.
I think the La Follette Institute, for example, does provide
right.
tenure
yes.
homes these days.
Right.
Okay. But the
yeah.
IR not.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you think Jerry Summers' death had any impact on the Institute?
Well,
premature death.
Yes, certainly. Yeah, he died in his mid-50s.
Yeah.
I have kind of two feelings about that. One was that unquestionably he was a major figure in the IR program with such solid standing within the economics department and a kind of a Midas touch with respect to getting funds for a variety of programs, some of which were pretty hardcore economic mm-hmm. and labor economic, as well as a variety of programs and interests yeah. that he had in industrial relations research topics that were not thought of as hardcore economic. So, the program just would have had, I think, a greater chance of prospering
yeah.
and having a closer relation to economics. But I think that it would only have postponed the inevitable, is my feeling. And even Jerry, in his last couple of years there, was pretty unhappy with the treatment that the IR program mm-hmm. was getting from economics that
yeah.
you know shows up in
right.
hirings and
yeah.
salaries
right.
and so on.
Yeah.
And he himself wanted to see the program have an independent
mm-hmm.
establishment.
Yeah.
It would have given his the group of economists in the department who were affiliated
mm-hmm.
and whose main
right.
interests were in industrial relations. Sought more bargaining power and
yeah.
independence and
yeah.
stature
yeah.
and so on.
You mentioned the inevitability, and you can think of that as one econ-IR relationship. Another might be the nature of the labor market and the kinds of people who are coming out of degree programs as potential replacements for the Barbashes and
yeah.
Sands.
Yeah.
Do you think that was an important consideration?
Yeah, very much
yeah.
so. In a way, there's, I suppose, two questions, that interesting questions could be raised, or ways of phrasing the issue you posed. One is, what was it inevitable at Wisconsin? And the other is it an inevitability in our profession as a
yeah,
whole?
Right.
And I think it was inevitable at Wisconsin,
yeah.
Which is a shocking thing to say, since this is the university where this got started and where we had at times the most prestigious
mm-hmm.
Program in industrial relations in the nation. But despite all that, I think the trend in the department towards the more hardcore economics research methodology, epitomized, that's the right word, characterized
mm-hmm.
is the term, characterized by the econometrics
right.
and the mathematical economics. And then beyond that, the subject matter and approaches to research were just
mm-hmm.
quite
yeah.
Separate and
yeah.
drifting, and, I mean, different from
right.
the industrial relations. So I think it was inevitable
yeah.
here at Wisconsin. And whether or not it's the same applies to our profession as a whole, in the nation as a whole, I think it's probably inevitable there as well. I think that the Cornells and the University of Illinois programs are rare, at least unusual.
And the question is, where are you going to hire people to replace those who retire?
That's right. So that was the other very fundamental question that you raised, which is that the training in with the PhDs in economics is just quite different from the sort of subject matter methods that research methods that we associate with the industrial relations program here, particularly historically.
Let me stop this and turn over. Okay, we're on again. Well, basically, the decline we've already talked about, and what could have been done to preserve the institute. You probably were not involved in these various negotiations in the last few years. It was on its last legs, and so you probably can't really say very much about that.
Yeah.
I think the coup de grace was really also that Crawford report on that recommended getting rid of most of the interdisciplinary programs, and IR got a very bad review from them. Not so much on the substance, but on the this is not appropriate for a university to be involved in these things. It wasn't that IR was doing a bad job, but it didn't fit in with the model.
Well, I assume there. No, I'm not familiar with that report, and so I don't know.
That was a Mansky and Pilyavin report that recommended getting rid of a lot of these programs. It's the studies issue.
Yes,
that
right,
you mentioned
back to
before.
That. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know, in looking back, just sheer kind of history and economic history was a fundamental component of the IR program. And historically, you know, you might say it's one of the foundation building blocks. It was John R. Commons in his, was it four-volume history of the American labor movement, I think. You know. So again, that also is a reference there to the importance of labor unions in the in America's labor markets and the political role and the sociology, psychology. And it was very multidisciplinary and very much tied in with labor unions. And so that, you know, the fading of labor unions certainly contributed to its becoming relatively obsolete. But more, I don't know, more fundamentally, I guess, would be the types of research, historical, and of course the broadest term to use, and it was once used with great glory, was institutional, institutional economics. And so the fact that that, you know, practically disappeared from the field of economics by the 1960s, if not perhaps even earlier, is, you know, symbolic in some ways of why our type of IR program is not going to survive. At least within, you know, within economics.
In a sense, in economics, there's been a kind of pulling in. The fringes have been cast adrift. Economic history,
history
of economic thought, development to some degree, although that's making a resurgence. If not here, I'm not sure, but elsewhere, Bob Lucas is doing a lot of work on development now.
Well, that's more economic growth.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Broadly.
Yes, you're right.
And it's very, of course, theoretically based his particular research and models. So it seems it's inevitable. I think it's pretty inevitable.
Well, Bob Lampman, remember, it used to say about the Poverty Institute, every now and then it would come up for a new grant, and he would say, well, you know, should we still continue this thing?
Yeah,
maybe
sure,
it's right. Done what it should do.
Yeah.
And most people are reluctant, of course, to let go.
Yes.
And the Poverty Institute is still with us, and who knows, maybe there forever. But IR, maybe that was a particular phase of American history, American economic history, especially World War II with all the wage controls that gave rise to all of these guys, George Shultz and everybody else getting their, Clark Kerr getting their feet wet in this business.
Yeah.
But that was a particular episode that's now irrelevant.
And
it's interesting history, but nothing more. Whereas the poverty, that seems to be a continuing issue. But again, you know, maybe people should refocus on other things rather than using this as a...
But, you know, clearly,
no,
I think there's a major distinction between programs that are research and, you know, you get people affiliated with it just to carry out a variety of research projects, and they're, they pretty much have to be self-financed.
That is different.
As distinct from being a department or something close to that within a university. It's taking up the university's core support that way. So there are a variety of labor issues, even some that are pretty close to old-fashioned industrial relations topics that remain, and that are to some extent covered by economics, and I can mention a couple here. One would be even these kind of personnel questions having to do with hiring decisions tenure decisions and so on. And take a guy like Ed Lazier, who is here at Stanford, putting a lot of economic theory and rigor to that subject matter, but he certainly does it from a hardcore base of traditional neoclassical economics. And there was another I had in mind, but it's slipped me, my mind temporarily here.
Probably. It seems to me you've answered the questions that. It seemed to me that would be, relevant based on your experience and all of the institute. To the extent to which you taught programs, you taught some kind of methods course, I suppose, early on, and then Schwab somehow picked that up somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
And you saw IR students in the labor econ graduate courses, and to some degree in the workshop. But otherwise, because
there might have been
fewer of them were involved in the, you might say, the more labor econ side of things.
That is, you're thinking of the methods, for example, as being more statistics.
You were teaching, and then that's evolved into something quite different with Schwab.
Oh yeah.
And. But there were IR students coming into the graduate labor courses, but not too many.
Right.
Yeah. And some in the workshop, but again, that was not too frequent.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, Paula Voos, kept the program, I think, alive with bridging the two departments and fields. It was kind of a lonely struggle that she was carrying on.
It's interesting to think about it. In some ways, it was inevitable, in many ways. And then here, LNS was paying all the business school people to teach the courses in the program.
Right. Yeah.
Which, in a way made no sense. And budget crunch comes and they say, why should we pay those guys? Let them teach those courses over there.
Yeah.
There was an effort to move it to the business school, but it was haggling over the price. And so on. So I think it was, an episode in the life of the university. And
I did think of what my other example. Yeah. I think it's worth saying, for, as I'll explain. In addition to the Ed Lazier and application of hardcore neoclassical economics to that kind of, that issue, there's also the hardest of hardcore bargaining models,
yes,
you know, which
right.
is
yes,
symbolized
right.
by a mathematician getting a Nobel Prize in economics, a mathematician getting a Nobel Prize in economics who didn't know a whit about economics, but it was entirely through his theory of games, Nash. And yet, at the same time, you know, that is, I still continue to think has made very little contribution to the our understanding of the remaining collective bargaining that goes on, or some people try to apply it, including Chris Flynn, a labor economist in our department, to just hiring decisions and so on. I may be proved wrong in the long run. It may achieve breakthroughs and so on. But it never had a toehold in our industrial relations program, and but it's this representation of a topic that nevertheless has a potential application to industrial relations, but not. And that brings up the specific case of John Kennan, for example, who is our latest, was a relatively recent hire in our department as a labor economist, who had a background, among other things, in bargaining models and looking at applying them to the explanations of strike activity. And yet he's a very hard-nosed purist within economics and very unsympathetic to most of the research that was going on in the field of industrial relations. And I think it's just kind of unrealistic to think that John Kennan, who I admire enormously, could have changed the industrial relations program here, even if he were that
inclined
or, and do I dare say, welcome? I never understood why the IR people didn't make a stronger effort to try to get John involved. Mm-hmm. But, in hindsight, I think it probably wouldn't have worked anyway. I think at the time, maybe Craig Olson, was he ever the director?
Craig
actually was, and John got along very well and so on. But there just was not this effort. John also, it's kind of a gossipy thing, but I think John is a person who, if you don't give him the right nod right from the beginning and so on, he kind of freezes up, and it's pretty hard to win him back at that point. But it's it's another example of how difficult it is to to get this real bridge between something that we associate with an IR program here and not only economics but other the disciplines.
And Illinois and Michigan State and Cornell have never had that problem because they've had their own separate freestanding organizations where they they hire people and they teach the full range of courses regardless of what other people are doing.
That's right.
And so they become a world unto themselves.
Yeah, that's right. Well, a world unto themselves, they certainly become a viable entity unto themselves. Yeah. Now, whether or not they are making contributions to the broader set of research topics that certainly overlap economics, sociology, history, and so on, they maybe hold up pretty well in that regard. I really don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
They, of course, had this great advantage, as you say, of being able to have their own pot of money to work with. In some cases, it's associated with political support in the state.
Oh, yeah.
And again, labor unions have supported our school for workers, Well, they've supported the industrial relations program at Berkeley and UCLA, and that's a source for support. But in the long run, the program itself has got to meet the standards.
Yeah. You know. And actually, you know, when you think back, originally Jerry got a bunch, maybe 10 RA ships from the grad school, you know, that were a tremendous, when he was bringing in all kinds of money.
Yeah.
After he died, I was asked to pick up this Manpower Institute thing he was, which I did for a few years, and I was able to get a lot of money. I, you know, four or five of these students hired. But then the Reagan era came along, and, you know, Ray Marshall was no longer advising Jimmy Carter, and, you know, that money just plummeted.
Yes.
And so then there was no, you know, the money had really dried up, so it made it very hard to recruit students and support them. Well, Glenn, let me thank you very much. It's very interesting to hear your comments, and especially your perspective on the relationship between the Institute and economics. The other people I've talked to, you know, can't really speak to that, and that's why I really wanted to hear what you had to say. So, thank you.